Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. I hit the Pizza Hard post-show. I'm now right after my competition, and you know, post-show, it's all about how much food can I go eat. I'm stocked my hotel room full of Oreos, and this isn't me. I'm just giving a scenario, but one person that came to mind that I wanted to have on our podcast was Astrid Naranjo. Did I say your name right? Yep. Naranjo? Oh, okay, Naranjo. Great. So Luke and I came across her page. It's for one, at Anti-Diet Dietitian, which is an awesome IG handle, and we want to bring her on because we, as competitors, struggle significantly with being all or nothing, following a very strict diet regimen, or going to have nothing at all and have no process of creating sustainability in this diet approach and for long-term physique outcomes, but also mental health outcomes. So we want to have Astrid on and dive into how can we create a more sustainable competition approach that leads to physique outcomes, but without, you know, sacrificing our mental health along the way. So Astrid, how are you? Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to have a chat about this specific topic because it's a bit underrated and a lot of people don't really like talking about it, or maybe just don't think that there is any relevance on talking about it. Or sometimes there is fear or a bit of a taboo to talk about struggles that just normal competitors or just general population go through these different challenges. So sometimes it's just really hard to know, well, if I open up about this, is this going to be relevant for anyone else? Like, no one really cares. Why should I speak about this? And it becomes more like a personal issue that just goes underneath and no one knows about it. So you seem to just trying to handle your emotions or that side of emotional eating more as like, this is your own problem to deal with it. No one really cares about it. But in honestly, there's a lot of people struggling with the same thing. And sometimes when you actually talk about it, you feel so relieved that there is a lot of commonality around triggers, around different challenges that we tend to struggle with. And once we are able to identify it or speak about them, it's actually very interesting to know that there is an actual struggle, and sometimes we overcomplicate it, or because we don't have the tools to do it or manage those feelings or those emotions or strategies to navigate when you're having those waves or cravings or urges. What do I do now? Or how do I do it? What should you be doing before that even starts? So it is a really important topic, and I appreciate you guys are trying to get a bit more of this out there, because I think it is the missing piece of any sustainable approach to manage your physique, your lifestyle, and your relationship with food. So you have this like triage, and you have your training, the adequate training. If you plan it, you program it, and it's appropriate for you, you will stick to it. You will get results, but your nutrition has to be right. And the nutrition piece is, it has to be something that you can stick to and that you can follow through. And that is going to allow you to perform well, but it's also going to allow you to do the things you need to do. But the other missing piece is that mindset, which is the other part of that triangle that I'm talking about. If your mindset is not in the right place, your training could be perfect, your nutrition could be perfect, but everything is going to be unstable, or you're not going to be able to be consistent or stick to something that you want to do because of anxiety or depression, because of just poor body image or just a very unhealthy relationship with your with yourself. So it is like you could be doing all of these things, but the right intentions are not there, or you could be doing it not necessarily with the true goals of making yourself better or putting yourself in a very healthy position across the line, but more so because of self-loathing or punishment or just not wanting to do the things because you deserve it, but because you have to, or those kind of things. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'd love to hear what you think.
No, it absolutely does make sense. And like when a lot of us coach, like I'm a dietitian as well. Like when I first started out, you want to learn all the numbers, right? Like I wanted to know, like, what is the right diet approach to program protein and carbohydrates and training and all these things. And finally you get out of school and you start working with people, right? And you realize that none of that matters unless you can get someone to stick to a plan. And like the Eric Helms had a really good pyramid of like programming, you know, a hierarchy of importance around nutrition. And the base of this is all around sustainability and enjoyability, right? Because what is a perfect diet? Well, it's the diet you can stick to at the moment, and nothing else truly would matter beyond that. So that's kind of where we're having to meet clients. And so for one, what you're bringing up around mindset, like that stands out as a huge piece. I think in our competitor realm, we have some people with extremely strong mindsets that can overcome a lot of the same pressures that many feel, but just don't admit to it. Because when I think what we're seeing now is when you bring up flexible eating or intuitive eating or sustainable dieting, in a lot of our world, it's looked as like that's for the evidence nerd people, and you just need to eat chicken and rice, bro, and man up. So there's kind of like this ego macho thing around having a strict diet and utilizing those other tools can't get you to your goals, and they're looked as being a weaker application. And even though if you look deep down, all of us share those same feelings, just some are fighting hard to override them more than maybe others. And I think with that being said, if we're able to lessen the burden of this process and make it more enjoyable, it's going to be more sustainable. And I've been bodybuilding now for, and Luke's the same thing since he was like really young, younger than me. If you're going to be in this game for 10, 15 years, you need to be able to enjoy it at some point. We can be pretty stubborn for a while, but there is ways to build in and try to help people's mindset and create sustainability, right? That makes the process just more enjoyable. And if you enjoy it more, you're going to get better outcomes through what you're saying, like with that triad, through the training approaches and nutrition approaches that you're utilizing. So I think a lot of that sticks and probably will touch points, pain points for a lot of our viewers that we do have, that this isn't about the person that has a nonstop struggle with eating. It's even for us that are trying to find tools to better ourselves and enjoy the process even more. Do you find like that there is a degree of, you know, for a competitor, like what does that look like, a sustainable eating approach? Because at some degree, there's probably some level of tracking that needs to take place when you have pretty high end physique goals. What spectrum do you lie in? Like, what does that actually look like when you're coaching someone in different parts? Do you work with competitors? I should ask you that too.
I do.
Yeah.
I do work with different goals, and competitors are one of those. I do believe, like, if you're a competitor that really needs to see very specific goal, they have a specific goals and they have a limited time, there's not much wiggle room to play with to go intuitive or just try to throw numbers and see where you land. So it doesn't really work for those who have a specific objective and specific physique goals that the more objective you can be, the faster you can get there, and the less, I don't know, mental gymnastics you have to figure out to actually get there. However, there's always time for everything. And sometimes, depending on the mental state of your client, you will have to dial back a little bit. Sometimes you can see that your client is becoming a bit obsessive or is taking a huge toll in their emotional health or their relationship with the body or food. And sometimes we gotta make the call as coaches that it is not the right time. It could be a really, really good opportunity, but I guess it's coming back to what are your values and what does it matter to you? And is this something that is it going to be beneficial for the long term? Or is it just something that we can wait a little bit more and just be healthier on the inside? It's difficult because obviously you have, like if you have registered yourself in a competition and you have been doing and putting in the work, it can be a little bit hard to make the call and say, hey, I'm no longer doing this. Obviously, it is not the way a athlete, especially having that mindset of, like, I'm doing this, there's nothing that is going to take me out of this, is going to make things different. But sometimes in the extreme cases, you gotta dial back a little bit. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be a quitter or you have to just throw everything out of the window because you're not in the right place or in the right mindset, but it's about before even making the decision to do that, is like, am I in a healthy place to do this in the first place? Because important self-awareness of where you're at with your emotional health and your relationship with food will really help you to navigate through the process with the right intentions and the right strategies. If you have had a eating disorder in the past and you sort of have been thinking about it, I want to compete, but I'm not sure if I am going to go back to what I used to be or had the way I used to behave or the way I used to think about my body or food, is a bit of a double-edged sword to walk that path, not knowing that some things in you did go better and have been really good, but they can anytime come out again and really fuck you up. So I'm coming this from even my own experience. I've always wanted to really get to one day that I am going to compete because I have the body. I built a decent amount of muscle that, like, if I lean out, I would have a very nice physique. But there's something in me that says, I don't think it's worth it. Like, it is good to feel really, really good, but at the same time, like, I don't want to fall in love with a physique that I am not gonna be able to stick to. So there's a lot of things that come back and forth with what I have dealing with for a long time. And just coming pretty much honest, being honest with myself, like, do I really need to go there if I don't know what the outcome can be with my own mental state or my emotional health or my, like, if I like that too much, I'm going to do extreme things to try to keep it that way. Because you get to fight against hunger, your biofeedback, and that could be something that could, again, come against you in a way that if you don't know how to manage it or if you become too fixated on having a specific body composition or a specific body shape, it can become at some point unsustainable and your biofeedback is going to make things even harder. So some people can have it a little bit easier because maybe they have probably that component of hunger and appetite easier. Like they have generally lower appetite and lower needs to always think about food, but some people got it really hard. So it's just looking at things that are going to help you succeed, and whether that is the sport that is applicable for you. Some people that I have met and worked with, they did a bodybuilding show just once, just to see, just to challenge themselves to do it, to see what was it like. And their relationship with food and their body didn't go well. Some other people, I probably think were born for this. Like they are really, really nailed down. They like robots. Like, yes, you tell me what to do, I do it. I don't care. Like it's very straightforward for them. And it seems to be very easy to come in and out. And there's a bit more, I guess, this association with like being very fixated with their physique, and they treat themselves more like, okay, this is a sport, this is not sustainable, this, let's move in and out from here, and I'm okay with that. So it is so wide in terms and broad, depending on who are we speaking with, and some people will be very successful and respond really well, and some people will not. So I think that probably a small, medium size population that we're referring that will probably struggle the most are the ones that you find after post show they struggle with binge eating, with worsened eating disorders, really trying to just recover a healthy mindset and healthy body weight, because they were not even told or taught how to navigate post show contest prep. So there are a lot of things that could be done better from the coaching point of view, but there's also importance to know everything from the get-go before you even decide that you want to make or go into our prep. Just know the entire roadmap and what it takes to get there and what it takes to do what it's going to be like. And it is good for patients, clients, whoever is working with you that really want to try that out, to be very aware of their background and their emotional health, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a level of objectivity that comes with competing as well, that that initial interview process can start to weed out, you know, not weed out, but identify people who tend to be a little bit more on the emotional portion of the scale, and that there's going to be more strategies that need to be implemented to manage them through a prep relative to someone like me or John, who treat this as like a science experiment and like just doing, you know, the scientific method on trying to figure out the best way of going about this. This is how J3U came about, is me and John are just absolute freaking nerds, and we just want to know the best way to do this. But not everybody is like that, where they, like you said, can disassociate themselves from that. So from like an objective coaching standpoint, are there specific tools you would use for that client throughout a dieting phase that would get to the point of body comps of contest prep to help them manage that, whether that be nutrition strategies or, you know, emotional management strategies? Like, what are those tools that you use to objectively manage that client? Because you mentioned you have some competitors. Like, what are you doing to manage that environment for them? Because there's got to be some tools that coaches have in their tool belt to be able to manage either the John or I, who fully dissociate and really just want to understand the process and perfect it, to the slightly more emotional individual who does kind of wear their heart on the sleeve and are going to be a little bit more bothered by that process.
Yeah. So when we think about the different things that can go well or wrong throughout a week, throughout the day, there are going to be emotional challenges that always happen, just because some days something off or your dog is sick, or there was a death in your family. Like, there are things that are going to be out of your control that can make things harder for you when it comes to trying to be as robotic as you can to get to your goal. So sometimes there are things that are going to happen that you're not going to be able to change, but can affect you deeply. So one thing that I really like to hone in with my clients is learning to control how you respond and how you can do, what can you do when there's something that you cannot control. And for the most part, you got to think whether is it something that I can change or improve? Is it in my power to make things better? And if you do, then you can do something about it and that makes you feel better. Now, this on the other side, if there's something that is totally out of your control, it's more up to you how you respond and how you manage. You can just see the glass half full or half empty. And it's up to you whether you decide to be depressed and be anxious and be sad, and whether that is going to make any difference or going to change anything, or just go and eat all the cake and all the cookies that you have in the cupboard. Would that make you better? Would that make any difference in the outcome of what you're complaining or dealing with? And the other part is, if you can make, or you cannot control it, but you can make things better for yourself, what could be that has nothing to do with food that will make you feel better? So non-food related strategies that will help you to cope with that discomfort, with that emotional dysregulation, or how can I just learn how to disassociate food as my only way to cope when it comes to dealing with emotions? So basically, the biggest thing that you somehow learn with emotional eating is asking yourself as well, if you have an urge, if you are presented with that need for eating something because of any external situation, is having the amount of skill to ask yourself, you use the four really rules, like, do I really, 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 really want this? And if you don't have the capacity to actually respond to that, like, do I really, 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 really want this? You probably don't need it. And also asking yourself, am I really hungry? When this is a situation where there is emotional components in it, there is likely a solution that is nothing is not related at all with food. So if hunger is not the problem, food is not going to be the solution. So it's just having that statement in your head and repeating yourself, well, I'm not hungry, and I know that what I'm doing right now is more emotional, is something that I just feel this hole in my body is building this anxiety. It's something that has nothing to do with food, but it's just kind of like the only way that I know how to cope with my emotions. So it's learning how to navigate, what am I actually feeling? Where do I feel this discomfort? Like, trying to identify and locate it in your body. Well, it feels like it is in my stomach. It feels like it's just in building up in my traps, in my shoulders. I feel my neck is tight. And navigating your body and learning how to not acting upon impulses or strong urges just because there's something uncomfortable is really hard, but it's a skill that you learn once you start being aware of that there are emotions that are going to come back and forth. They're going to be uncomfortable, but you can have more control over what is uncomfortable and how you deal with it, without just in an act from an impulse, just, okay, I need to escape from this feeling. And not knowing what to do, you just seek food for a very brief disconnection from the reality. But is it solving the true emotion? Because once you finish the packet of cookies or the chocolate, you're still feeling like shit, and likely worse, because then it's not just that you ate something that you didn't really need it or really want it, or you didn't even enjoy it because you didn't even pause or slow down, but because on top of that, the situation and the feeling is still there. So, okay, nothing become better from what I did. So you add an additional point of shame, guilt, and that, because now it's like, I don't have enough willpower. What am I doing this to myself? And it's like this guilt and shame, self-loathing, that just can bring a vicious cycle. And that's what we see a lot in competitors or just general population, that they just get this vicious cycle. Okay, well, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna skip breakfast tomorrow, and they start doing mental gymnastics again on how to compensate to make it up for the mistake they made just for in response to an uncomfortable situation. But what happens is, because they then skip breakfast, then they start building their hunger, and they continue to try to work out with their willpower. And at the end of the day, they're starving, they're ravenously hungry, and the decision-making is to a level that can be very poor, and they end up binging again. So you start building these vicious cycles on and on and on and on, and until you decide to not compensate and not break and break the cycle from continuing to happen, it's going to make it worse and worse. Does that respond to answer your question?
Yes, very much so. I think just prep in general, it's a constant, relatively constant, uncomfortable state that we set ourselves up with being food deprived, and that's where that uncomfortability lies. So the initial knee-jerk reaction is, well, what makes you feel better? Well, not being so uncomfortable with low food, for one. But then when you have that emotion that kicks in, that also is uncomfortable. And as humans, we want to be comfortable. Like, uncomfortable doesn't feel good. So, well, how do you feel comfortable again? It's like, well, food might be an outlet for someone. But I think everything you're bringing up is trying to build self-awareness. And I think for a bodybuilder, or anyone for that matter, it's definitely a higher level of thinking that has to take place, because a lot of us go through our days without thinking about anything we do. You just eat, and you're in such a rush, and especially how our culture is built up, that we don't sit in the moment to actually reflect and have introspective thought. And as a bodybuilder, it's important to get better, just what Astrid is saying, right? For all the feedback to relay it to your coach too, right? About being intuitive and reflective on your training, your meals. Were you hungry at this meal? I don't know. I just scarfed it down. So I think taking these time throughout the day to sit in your actual state that you're in, whether that's consuming a meal, and think about how it makes you feel. But I think, Ashton, what you bring up too is like a tools that, like, I know Luke and I have used them, is like journaling is a powerful tool to utilize for, like, when that emotion comes up, you need to voice it out somewhere into the world. Rather than trying to hold on to it until it does reach a break point and you take an action, like then reaching out to food for a coping mechanism, right? I think taking ownership and control of that emotion, like, I am feeling this right now, whether that be journaling it down and then going through all those steps that you brought up of, like, makes me want to go eat food, and what does that lead? Does it fix the root issue that this emotion's coming from? And that's going to be different for everybody. I would assume around that, but then having some other outlet that could be in place that's a healthy choice instead, that would not be like a food binge, right? So what could that look like? And it's tough in prep because there's not a lot of aspects that we can do. It's like, hey, go out on a walk and get just in tune with yourself and try to get away from whatever the situation, the environment that's spurring on that emotion. Maybe it's like, well, damn, my legs are so tired from cardio, I can't walk anywhere. Or is it read a book or something else? But I think at least journaling, or would you say, Astrid, having some maybe person along the journey that would be an appropriate person where you could share that emotion with and how you feel before you take action? Could that be a coaching role? Like, because I've told my clients, like, if you have these feelings come about, message me right away. Like, voice it out to me. I want to be part of that with you so we can make the right actions. And because usually it's all after the fact. So if you know a client struggles, like, do you have stuff in your maybe check-in forms that looks to draw those out of people that maybe are a little bit more reserved in mentioning it? And then do you provide yourself in that way? Like, is that a helpful way that you find to, hey, if your client is feeling that emotion, like, to have them message you right away to address it? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I'm very, very like to what you're describing. I'm someone who builds such a strong relationship with my clients that I like to be part of the journey. And one of the things that I truly dig in is their emotional state. And I am checking up on them quite often. So let's say it is midweek. I always say, hey, how is your week going so far? I just want to make sure they are on the right track. They're feeling okay. And sometimes they have such a strong relationship and open communication that they have not fear of communicating if something is off or if something is going wrong. So I get my clients to message me even when they are about to binge or they feeling like something is not great. Hey, I end up binging last night. Okay, what happened? Why? And so let's brainstorm things right away. So at least if I wasn't able to help you prevent the binge, well, let's see how can we navigate the thinking and the emotions right now after doing that, so we are not falling into a vicious cycle and we are able to put in place the strategies to just try to avoid doing that again or getting back on track. So that is one of the biggest things that I find that's super powerful when it comes to having, if you do have the capacity and the possibility to work with a coach, that is always going to be the best. Sometimes it's harder because not everyone is going to be like us, being open or wanting to get our clients having that full access to just letting you know what is going on. Some coaches are very isolated and separated from their clients' experience. They just give them macros, they look at their physique, they critique, okay, you're doing a really good job, you're on track, and there's nothing else, there's no connection, there's no, like the clients wouldn't feel comfortable, or maybe they don't even know that whether they can have that access to their coach and say, hey, I'm really struggling right now, or something is not great happening with me. What should I do? Or can you give me some strategies? Or it's more like you are the client, you are on that end, and I just get you to see you once a week, if so, by our check-ins, or like even if we do at some point a video call or something, is when they can open up and give you some of the struggles. But I really feel like that is something that has to be part of your check-in, even if you don't do calls, being able to express and ask, well, do you have any binge episode, or have you felt the urge to do it? If so, what was happening? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? It is one of the biggest things that I tend to prioritize, same as biofeedback, looking at how's your emotional state, what's been happening this week, if you've been feeling happy, have you been feeling off, have you been feeling sad, anxious, what are some of the triggers for you that lead you to eat emotionally. So it's been able to also identify what triggers specifically are making you feel out of control or the need for you to reach to food. So you will have, in many cases, your clients will have very specific triggers that are always going to be the same. So if they are people pleasers, or they have an event, especially when there's something out of their control, or if they have to travel, it's like anything that takes them out of their box and their routine and their rhythm is something that is like a shock for them. And that is going to lead them to either be an all or nothing and just throw everything out of the window just because they can't stick to their plan. Or it's just that frustration of not knowing what to do now, that they won't be able to stick to the plan 100%. And there's, in part, being a coach is your responsibility to letting them know that you don't have to control 100% of everything all the time. As long as you're giving your best effort and you're putting your best foot forward, that's what I want to see. I want to see that you're giving your best regardless of the situation or the conditions that are surrounding you. You may not control everything. You may not be 100% in your targets, but you did your best. And that's the thing in terms of being all or something instead of all or nothing. Because all or something, when you start reframing that thinking pattern of, okay, if I am do something, I am doing everything. But if I can't do everything, I just, what's the point? But rather than doing that, just switching and changing the narrative to, you can, and if you can, do everything and try to aim for being the best and having that 100% of your targets all ticked off, great. But if you can't, because of life, because not every day is going to be perfect, can you do something instead of nothing? So just, even though it feels like, well, I don't want to be a mediocre people. Like, okay, well, if I'm not perfect, I'm just a mediocre. It's not the point. The point is, you want to be able to still be able to show up. You want to still somehow, if you can't track perfectly, you can't guesstimate. And you're doing something that is at least getting you way closer to what you're supposed to be doing than just not doing anything at all. Same when it comes to training. If you're feeling off, you're feeling very fatigued, well, I don't necessarily need to go 100%, but I can still show up to the gym and I can go 4 RIR. Like I can do something about it. I can still move towards my goals without necessarily having to do or take the position of doing anything at all because I can't be perfect. So it's been all or something, or aiming for consistency over perfection, because at the end of the day, perfection is not going to be always possible, even though when it comes to look at the level of leanness and the physique you want to achieve for a competition, you got to have some level of rigidity. It can't be that flexible, as you may know. And obviously that is going to change as you move closer and closer to the actual contest day. But there's, as a contest prep athlete, you will have to understand that there will be times that there is not much wiggle room to have much flexibility. But you got to be okay, again, with life. If life happens, this is way better to take that side of, okay, I can still do something, even if I can't do everything that I was supposed to do. So it's going to still keep you on track, even if it's not perfect, if that makes sense.
I know some people listening might be thinking, like, y'all are talking about all these emotions and that doesn't matter for the high level competitors. And I would say that matters a lot for the high-level competitors, because when you look at the best coaches in the game, who we deem as like the gurus, right? Like maybe it's Hani Rambod with coaching Derek Lunsford. And I talked to Derek about what does Hani do? Or even Fuad Abiad, like what is it about Hani when he coaches that he gets the result he does? And there's not some special diet or training that he does, but he's so invested in that athlete's process and communicates so closely with them, he ends up pulling more out of them that way. So these top-level coaches, when you think about on the relationship side, they're very close to their athletes. So I'd almost say if you're working with competitors and you aren't addressing the mindset and emotional side, I don't know if you'll ever be able to fully pull out the most from that person, because what you don't know, you don't know. So I think at least on like, even I know Luke and I, like on our assessment forms, check-ins, like we have things that bring up like, what are your wins for the week? What are areas for improvement? And also they know they have open communication lines to send us. What I found helpful is even like, even if it's a 1 to 2 minute voice memo, I can pick up so much from someone's language versus reading only text. Because I had some guys there, they're so short-winded. It's like, good, good, good. And it's like, I don't know really how they feel. Like, that client, you have to send me voice messages from now on. Or for this client, we need video, you know, chat so I can see facial expressions. So truly to be top level, you're going to need that emotional connection. And we see it all the time. Like, I look at Nick Walker and Matt Jansen. These other high-level guys, they have extremely close relationship, and they're addressing the emotional side. So I don't want anyone to get thinking that us talking about emotions is disconnected from high-level physique results, because there's absolutely a strong connection there. Another point that you brought up is also the learning assessment with clients that you bring up, because I have some clients that, you know, you'll get a text 9 p.m. at night, they're like, I ran out of cream of rice. Can I substitute with just regular rice? You're like, yeah, of course. And there, but that's an immediate like pickup on my end that there's an education lack that's going to prevent that client from having this intuition on their own to make those decision processes. They want to be just perfect and right, but we realize we know that, man, there's a lot of flexibility to still get the same outcome. But mm-hmm. that should be addressed when you're getting those questions from your clients, to not laugh at them or shun them for like, yeah, you know, don't ask me this at 9 p.m. Pick that up and realize this is a teaching point that client is earlier on in their experience level of this nutrition and eating process, that you need to advance them up from someone that has that incompetency to then someone that's competent with intuition. And once they have that, that's an advanced level of nutrition approach that they can have, which creates a ton of sustainability, right? And that's where you want to take people through. So I think, like you mentioned, is like they will know the difference of, you know, when's it okay to have flexibility that's perfectly fine, that also shouldn't be driving anxiety because of life situations, and when stuff isn't going to be ideal, that we also have tools set up to realize what you can do in place and move past it. So I think there's a lot of good value points that you bring up within that can make someone extremely high level and advanced in what a lot of people are already intuitively doing, but it's not talked about in the same way. So it's viewed as not being high level physique coaching for like a top Olympian, but it absolutely is already in place. I know we're getting closer to time, but I want to pull out an important part of the competition phase around the post-show period, because this is by far some of the biggest struggle, right? I wanted to get from you, like, when working with people around that part of the phase, like they're entering into peak week, this show is about to happen, they know the post-show period is right around the corner. What, and you know what it can lead to for everyone, like everyone can go eat a bunch of food after they have their show. What tools do you already want in place in someone's peak week to help make them have a successful post-show period? Is there a few things that stand out in your mind that you want to make sure happen on the coaching end and the athlete end, so they doesn't lead them to binge eating or taking away from off-season progress when you have physique goals?
So with Peak Week, it's going to be a bit of a tricky part because you want them to be very structured and have that very successful before they jump on the stage. But obviously the work comes and starts even before that. Like all the prep should be getting them in a healthy place in terms of like not everything was all black or white, or you only had the capacity to eat this amount of food and there was no small room for some flexible dieting or eating some of your soul foods. So if you have been teaching your client that there is a little bit of a wiggle room that you can still fit things in your diet that are going to allow you to feel really good about your progress and about how you're managing your diet, that is going to be very successful for when you come in at getting closer to the stage part of and closing it this entire prep. Because once they know that that is going to be done, and the language you use and the way you work with the different foods and the way you communicate, like there's no good or bad foods, but we need to really focus on portion sizes and that there is no off limits foods either. But you gotta always think about, is this a priority? Is it something that you can always have later on? It's gonna be always there, but is this something that you really need right now? So it's bringing back giving the power back to the client as to they could have anything they want, but are these really the things that they want to eat now? Whether are these things are going to get them closer or further away from their goal? So it's more just navigating the aspect of knowing anything that you eat, anything that you desire is there for you. Like you're not going to be the one who's going to tell you that food is bad, don't eat it, or don't do this. But you can leave like the seed planted in terms of at the end of the day is your competition, is your body, and there are things that can act and help you get closer, and some things that may make things harder to get closer to your goal in terms of hunger management, appetite. There are things that are going to be very highly palatable that can trigger even higher cravings. Do you don't want that, especially when you are in such a very delicate place where hunger is high, appetite is high, energy is low. Like you don't really want to play with those things when you're getting closer to stage. So you can't always put the point where you can eat anything you want, but I want you to be really honest with yourself as to what truly matters to you and what is going to get you closer and make things easier and what is going to make things harder and play against you. And if something is going to play against you, I don't think it is wise to use it or eat it or have it right now. It's going to be there. Like it is not going to run away. Once you finish your prep, and we are no longer in this strong dieting phase, and we can start reversing out of your disc number of calories, and we start like a new building phase, it's totally cool. We can have that time to incorporate these foods again, because you're going to have a much more regulated appetite, and you're not going to be desperately craving for these foods. Like you can compare someone who is just about to jump on stage at 3-5% body fat with the levels of starvation on the top of the roof, comparing that to someone that has been out for six weeks already, and they have replenished some of their body fat, their hunger is lower, and you present them with the same food, there's likely going to be much more enjoyment and much more control than if you give that exact the same, present that exact same thing to someone who is about to jump on stage. It's like, so you, it's like if you were taking someone out of the streets that have ever eaten for 6 weeks and you give them a buffet of food. Like, they are going to eat everything and they're probably going to binge on everything they see, because that's the natural response of human behavior when there is lack of food, and there is a strong physiological response trying to fight against what is happening outside. So it is important, again, just the language, the way you communicate the goals with your client and the things that have to happen in order to achieve the goals. So at the end of the day, your client didn't choose or didn't do things just because you told them not to do something, but because it was their choice. It was because I want this to happen, but at least I had the choice. I could have done it if I would have wanted to have it, but I didn't want to put at risk being hungrier than what I already are now. So it's educating and giving the power to your clients that they can make conscious and informed decisions when it comes to these things.
Yeah, I agree along those lines. I think there is a huge education piece, especially for the newer client. They haven't experienced these things before, so they need some level of it. You can't until you truly go through it, right, and feel those emotions yourself. But I know a few things that, like, I've done too is, and I am, what am I now, Luke? 10 days post-show? I don't know. So I'm still in this, like, phase, right? Honestly, this was the easiest post-show period I think I've ever had. And one thing that, you know, looking back retrospectively is that I was a bit ready ahead and able to really drop off fatigue from just high step count, also eat more food into the show. So by the time I got to the show, I've already had quite a bit of food, and some of the fatigue had dropped off. So I think that reduced a lot of the drive to want to replace that, you know, feeling of terribleness with the good feeling of what food does. So I think strategy wise, like, at least allocate some duration of time to making sure you can feed someone up into the show and drop off fatigue, even if that means you have a few less days of dieting, because I think the back end of prep is worth it versus trying to eke out just a little bit more body fat off someone. And then also, just so you, I didn't even tell you this, Luke, like, at the show, we went out to eat at this burger place. I'm not into burgers. I had a ahi steak salad, a piece of salmon, and asparagus. That's all I had. My client was with me that did the figure show. She ordered this burger, and she saw me order a salad. It was just like, looked so disappointed. But my mindset in this was like, I wanted to challenge myself post-show with what I ate, the experiences of being around people. So I was trying to engage more and experience the actual setting. Enjoy the foods that I picked, that I picked in advance. So I knew where we were going, and I picked out, all right, I'm going to do this salad and this and this and that. And that's what I already knew my plan was. So it wasn't really spontaneous, right? Or I didn't get too hungry to where I could even think about it yet. And so then I could sit with this not very elaborate meal, but just enjoy it and enjoy the people that were there, which I don't think I've had that much show experience like that. It's always so food focused that I take away from the actual experience of people that are there to celebrate the moment. Then, you know, Renee and I, we went back to the hotel, and my friend got me like this kind of like cookie bar thing. And Carlin's Kitchen, I'll plug her. We split it. So I had half of this cookie bar thing, and that was it. There was nothing else to eat in our hotel, even if I did want it. So I think that was another thing, is don't hoard food in your hotel room. If it's not around, it kind of takes it off the table to eat. And a last point that I'm going to leave about my own experiences is that I was already excited and planning for what I was going to do after the show, competition wise, right? Like, I was so motivated for my goal after the show. I've already set in my like short term goals and my plan of like Monday, this is what I start with, nutrition and training. So I already had something in place, but I also had long term goals set. You brought this up, Astrid, about setting goals. I think a lot of times we get to the, to our show and then you're left with just an open pasture. Like there's no ceiling left. There's just, what do I do now? I feel lost. So I think if we set those markers along the journey, so you can look into that pasture and be like, oh yeah, this is where I'm headed. You have those goals marked. It might help give someone a bit more direction to be able to you know, stick on to a plan quicker. And like you said, food's going to exist again tomorrow. It's not going away. Like you don't have to eat everything in this one sitting. Like it's going to keep happening, right? So I will think I'll wrap up there. I know we're about time, Asher. I think this conversation is so valuable for all of our sector, but really anyone that's just trying to apply nutrition to their physique and have an outcome, because you might all run into some point of a diet struggle. And for some, it leads to more extreme conditions, right? With body image issues. And I think we set ourselves up for that in the competition world with already having a personality that's a bit neurotic and obsessive, then put on top of it judgment from other people. And you can realize you fall into like, yeah, maybe I do have body image issues, or I'm end up with some type of eating issues. So you're a highly valuable resource in the sector. We looked through your Instagram account and you provide so much great information. So I want to make sure that I give you a chance to plug anything that you'd like to help as resources or where people can learn more from you.
My best place to go to is my Instagram, as you mentioned. That's where I put my heart and try to put out there all the resources I can. I am working on something that is going to be a great resource, very specific about emotional eating, everything that is related to the psychology of eating, very soon. So I kind of partner with the Clean Health Fitness Institute, which is one of the Australian educators in terms of fitness and nutrition. And I am creating a guidebook that is going to be all about the psychology of eating and everything related to emotional eating, mindful eating, intuitive eating, different eating disorders that we don't even really talk about that are beyond just the common ones we hear all the time. We hear anorexia, bulimia, we hear binge eating, but there are a few more that probably are very interesting to learn about that are related to nutrition, beyond orthorexia, for example, or beyond nighttime eating, or when we think about people that over fixate in specific foods. So those are not necessarily eating disorders, but could be disorder eating somehow, and is being diagnosed and is in the diagnostic criteria in a specific book, DMS5. Now, there's something that will be coming probably next year, but this is something that is going to be like my huge baby that I'm going to work really hard on to put all that information out there when it comes to just creating awareness and completing that gap on that triage that I gave you, the triad that I talked to you about before. Okay, you can have a beautiful plan around training and you can have the best nutrition plan, but if your mindset is not in the right place, if you don't have the strategies to cope with certain things when they come out, your training can go to hell, your nutrition will do too, and you will end up just going back to square one. So it is just getting and prioritizing mindset and mental health as much as you do with training and exercise and nutrition. So that's where I'm sort of like really huge proponent. I was never like this before, but the more I got into nutrition and working with clients, I realized that behavior mindset and our managing emotions is one of the biggest things that can either help us and get us closer to our goals or completely work against us and completely derail from everything that we have been trying to do.
Well, Astrid, thank you again. That sounds like a tremendous resource that'll be coming out. So we'll make sure we leave your contact info in the description on the podcast and everyone follow along for when that resource does come out. And thanks again, Astrid, for coming on. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in, listening to us. And we will talk to you next time.